With decades of consulting and experience in the financial and corporate sectors, our guest today brings an understanding of how sleep impacts productivity, profitability, and corporate culture, as well as healthcare costs and safety risks in all organizations. We'll talk about the importance of restful sleep, how to recognize the signs of a sleep disorder, strategies to foster healthy sleep, and a whole lot more. Let's get started. Welcome to another episode of OrthoThrive. I'm your host, Richie Gurzon. Today, we have Nancy Rothstein joining us, known as the Sleep Ambassador. Nancy has been educating people and corporations about the importance of sleep and how to optimize it for more than a decade, and is on a quest to empower people to enhance their sleep so they can live at their best. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, Nancy, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you got to where you are today?
You know, I wish I had brought a copy with me to hold up, but I'll mention it. So I've been very engaged with and involved with the dental and ortho industry for about 15 years when this all started.
Wow.
And that's because I had a snoring now ex-spouse. We get along fine, but
yeah.
The snoring was not fun. And when my daughter, youngest now 30, was in kindergarten, I was yawning and falling asleep, helping in her classroom. And I took out a piece of construction paper and I wrote the original draft to my daddy snores, my daddy snores.
Yeah.
Fast forward, my colleague, friend, and treating my ex for sleep apnea was Dr. Michael Gelb, the dentist, who's one of the leaders in the dental sleep medicine field.
Yeah.
And TMJ and all of that. And I said, Michael, I've written this book, you know, do you want to write the foreword to it? And lo and behold, one of his patients was one of the senior people at Scholastic. And
wow.
So my daddy snores got published by Scholastic with a afterword, it's called, by Michael Gelb. And so we're talking 2008 that I was promoting dental sleep medicine and looking at the oral cavity as a gateway to health, as a gateway to sleep.
Interesting.
And there were very few, you know, we're talking 2008. And so the book was published now 400, 500,000 copies later. It starts a dialogue. Why is it so many copies? Because snoring is so prevalent and so underrecognized.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so this led to my quest of morphing a career in financial risk management to looking at sleep as a risk management issue, especially with my background for corporations, because how a person sleeps at home directly impacts how they function at work.
Absolutely.
Now, whether they're working at home now or they're working in the office. But I knew that something needed to be done and that there was a huge gap in dealing with sleep, generally poor sleep habits and all, as well as looking at sleep disorders. And here I am.
Yeah. So what are some of the main ways that insufficient sleep affects daily lives?
What ways aren't there?
Yeah.
So, you know, how you sleep is how you live. And the 30%, 8 hours, let's say average a day that an adult should get, influence the other 2/3 of your life. And if you're poorly slept, you have executive functioning, reaction time, decision-making, processing, all of that goes helter-skelter, not to mention the comorbidities with your physical health, cardiovascular disease, hypertension, depression and anxiety, all the worse if you have an untreated sleep disorder like obstructive sleep apnea. But you can take somebody who's being treated for OSA, that's the acronym, for obstructive sleep apnea, and they're being treated for it, and then take someone who has really poor sleep habits. And that person is just at big risk too, for all of these other health issues and their functionality in life.
I think people would be surprised to hear that, you know, it's just as big of an issue except those poor habits.
It is a huge issue. And I've lectured virtually to thousands of people over the last year and a half. And these are people who choose to listen to me. And they choose to recognize that they need good sleep. And you know what, Richie, what's so crazy? And for all of you listening who are medical professionals, staff with medical professionals, we were designed to sleep. What happened? Why am I even here? What has changed? What is the problem here? Why are 70% of the population in the US alone wanting to improve their sleep and having sleep issues? Why is 45%, if that's the correct figure, of the world sleep deprived? What's going on?
That's an interesting question. Do you have some
hypothesis? It's really simple.
Yeah.
Our biology hasn't changed and won't for eons. Our behavior has changed and we're inflicting poor behaviors on our sleep. Now, I said our biology hasn't changed. Sure, there are things that have adapted, have changed for the better, for the worse, and epigenetics and all of that.
Yeah.
And the industrial revolution and processed foods causing our jaws to be narrower and no place for the tongue and it's falling back. And all of that is true. Those are biological anatomical shifts.
Yeah.
But we're inflicting behaviors like, oh my God, where is my cell phone? Oh, I'm so happy it's not here. I put it somewhere. We're inflicting use of these gadgets. And as wonderful as they are, and technology, we're here right now. But we weren't designed to be looking at blue light when we're in bed.
We weren't
designed for brain stimulation in bed. We weren't designed to do a lot of things we do today that is inflicting so many ramifications on our biology. And we're seeing it in depression and anxiety, and we're seeing it in so many different ways, physiologically as well. And it's not sustainable, but it's doable. Good sleep is possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you're saying our current habits are not sustainable?
Oh, our current habits, some people are going to try to sustain them, but they're going to keep hitting, you know, the pandemic has shown that for me that I see in so many people is they're carrying anxiety to bed with them. They're watching the news in bed. They're on their phone. They're texting. They're playing games. They wake up during the night. They look at the clock. Their mind's off to the races. We just don't allow our biology to do what it was designed to do. Enter dentist, enter orthodontist.
Mm-hmm.
Because if your anatomy, if you have a airway disorder, your airway isn't functioning properly because you have some obstruction of your airway, be it your tongue's going back, your mouth's too small, your tongue goes back, all these different ramifications. Or you have allergies and you're not breathing properly, or you're a mouth breather. We'll talk about that because that's really, really important for
that's this interesting
cadre of people. Do you know if you're a nasal or a mouth breather?
No, I don't know.
I am going to right now give a big plug, and I won't run and get it and hold it up. But every person listening to this and every breather, adult breather, that's all of us, should be required to read this book. It's called Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art by James Nestor, who is a journalist, but he will give you the science of breathing, the history, how our facial structure has changed by going to the catacombs in France and looking at skulls from centuries and centuries ago. And why are we mouth breathing? We were designed to breathe through our nose. It humidifies, purifies, warms the air, and oxygenates us properly.
Yes.
When you breathe through your mouth, and you have I know you're curious about what signs there are for sleep apnea, but when you breathe through your mouth, you're bypassing a lot of that. And one dentist who has an FDA-approved oral appliance for sleep apnea has actually said, you should breathe through your mouth as often as you eat through your nose.
That's a good way to put it. At least it's memorable at the very least.
visceral.
Yeah.
And so how we breathe, especially in, and I've done work with the US Army, and I could, with their whole dental sleep medicine program. Yes. And I can tell you, most of these soldiers did not know if they were nasal or mouth breathers, but they swiftly learned. And once they saw the difference, they were like sort of taken back. And I wanted their patients to understand through their experiencing it, what does it mean when you put in an oral appliance for someone for sleep apnea? Jut their jaw forward. I have mild sleep apnea. I wear an oral appliance. What does it mean to open the airway? You're asleep. You don't know.
Yes, that's true.
So when you can open somebody's nasal airway by putting in a device called, for example, a nasal dilator called Mute, M-U-T-E, yeah. Mute Snore. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't, no.
MuteSnoring.com. It lets somebody experience, not a cure for sleep apnea, but it opens the nasal airway in a fashion so somebody can say, ah, that's what it means to breathe better nasally. That's what it would feel like if I was breathing properly.
Yeah. So are there some techniques you can use to become more of a nasal breather if you don't think you are?
I'm going to, you know, in this short amount of time we have, I'm going to go back and say, read James's book. It will be illuminating for you. It's so, he's a journalist. He's not a medical person. He's not a breathing expert.
Yeah.
Come somewhat of one. I'm actually on his expert Q&As about sleep and breathing. You're welcome to watch that interview. But I want all of you in the field of ortho and dentistry to understand that for your patients to experience the best results from your work, from your treatment that you are so well trained to do, look at good sleep and good breathing as comprehensive, collaborative care for your patients. You don't have to become, all of you become a practitioner of dental sleep medicine,
yeah,
and distribute your, it's not going to happen, but you do want your patients because you're the gateway to health. You want to provide your patients with educational resources and some kind of training because the better they breathe and sleep, the better they're going to live and the better your results are going to be. And you're going to build loyalty with your clients because they're going to say, you know, I went to a new chiropractor today and he had me breathing,
deal.
Not breathing, you know,
yeah.
Hold your breath, never said anything about nasal or mouth. So I don't have an extra copy or I bring him a copy when I go back.
Right.
Because I said, this is a must read because all your patients, if they're not breathing properly, if they're not getting good sleep quantity and quality, then their optimization of their health is not going to happen.
That makes sense. So what do you think the pandemic and just the current state and kind of maybe high anxiety level of world right now has affected people's sleep?
For one, I notice, and this was always an issue, but it's such a big issue now, is people are taking their anxiety to bed with them.
Yes.
And I so recommend processing anxiety and worries and woes throughout the day. Meditation, yoga, a walk, a run, whatever that is for you, therapy for sure. But just to get in bed, and maybe it's the first time you've been quiet. Now, all of this barrage of thoughts and thinking about your patients, about your life, about your health, about whatever it is.
Yeah.
You can't expect your brain and your physicality to slow down and surrender to sleep in a peaceful and calm way. And so
I've seen that with my 2-year-old, you know. If we're watching some television before bed, especially if there's a lot going on, he really has a hard time going to bed when we're on the
bed. All tune out from technology for the first week or so, half an hour. You should turn all that off for an hour before bed. Reading to your child, you know, my daddy snores is like so cute. I don't know if you snore or not, but it would be cute for your child because it opens.
Yeah, I've heard it. I do. Yeah. That's funny.
You've heard that you do.
Yeah.
Actually, somebody told me, I was interviewed for a podcast last week, and he said, I snore, but I think it's fine. He actually said this, it means I'm sleeping deeply. And I said, that's not true. Snoring is a sign that your airway is compromised in some way. Does it mean you have sleep apnea? No, because there are people who don't snore who have sleep apnea. But it is a sign that it's not cute for kids to snore. It means there's an obstruction to their airway and they are not oxygenating properly.
For sure, yeah.
But everybody, try it as an experiment. I'm not saying for the rest of your life, but hopefully. Tune out from technology so that the best sleep technology is inside of you. You were designed to sleep. Now, if your technology, if your physicality, your anatomy is not allowing you to breathe properly because some obstruction of your airway, then you may need a CPAP or an oral appliance or an external technology to help you. But your best technology for sleep is, and are you supporting it or are you hindering it? And if you're on your devices in bed, you're hindering it.
Yeah, I think that I've heard that many times. It makes a lot of sense. So are there any like less obvious symptoms that you're not getting quality sleep? Like maybe you don't realize it, but you're really not getting
great sleep. So a lot of people think they're getting, somebody said the other day, oh, I sleep 8 hours a day, but I'm so tired in the morning. And it's like, okay, your sleep is probably fragmented. Why do they snore? And people with sleep apnea with no bed partner don't really know, other than the fact they may wake up with headaches, they may wake up with a dry mouth from mouth breathing, they may be tired all the time because their sleep is fragmented. But there are other signs, you know, how do you feel when you awaken? Like, stop and say, how do I feel? If you need that coffee because you like it, great. But if at noon and 2 and 4, you need more caffeine, what's the problem? And a nap may be okay, and you should take a power nap, but it's not a substitute for nighttime sleep. So if you consistently need a nap, you've got to evaluate your nighttime sleep. So other signs, you know, how do you feel during the day? Are you awakening tired? Do you find, you know, you're dragging all the time? And if somebody tells you you snore or you stop breathing during the night, you've got to address that. But that's for you. Now, I think every dentist and every orthodontist should have some questions on their intake and with their patients regularly. Do you snore? Have you been told that you snore? Have you been told you stop breathing during the night? Are you tired during the day?
Yeah.
There is a slew of questions, and, you know, the ADA is doing more and more of that with respect to questionnaires, especially pediatric, they're working on, so that dentists can properly screen for prospective sleep disordered breathing, whether it's sleep apnea or other milder aspects of that. You have the opportunity. Doesn't mean you have to practice dental sleep medicine, but it does. I think you do. It's a big thing to say, have a responsibility to inform your patients enough to know that if they seem at risk, that they do something about it.
That's fair.
Do you feel rested when you wake up in the morning? If not, it may not be the dentist or the orthodontist's role, but you may refer them to a sleep specialist, because the average primary care doctor is not trained in sleep. And I have literally had people say that they went to their primary care, they snore a lot, they're always tired, they said, lose weight. Like, maybe they aren't going to lose weight, but what are they going to do in the meantime? Let's say they have undiagnosed sleep apnea. Now it's leading to hypertension, cardiovascular disease, depression, and they're supposed to just lose weight? Like, what about right now?
That makes sense. So sleep specialist, are there any... What do you think of devices that are supposed to measure your quality of sleep? Are they legitimate tools?
Great question. So measure the quality. So let's take, you know, the A-Watch or Apple Watch, Fitbit. All of those devices, those trackers, may give you information. First of all, it's not particularly accurate in the true sense of the word about how long you're in REM and et cetera, et cetera.
I've always wondered that. How does it
know? No, it's not that accurate. But here's the thing that can be helpful. It's like looking over time. Is there a pattern? The nights that I have wine, sure, red wine's going to help you fall asleep, but it's not going to, or white, it's not going to help you. It's going to interrupt your sleep cycles. May help you fall asleep, but it is not a good thing to do in the hours, a number of hours before bed. So watching the flow, watching the pattern of what you see in that is important, and to start to notice it. But to me, I think how you feel is what's most telling. And if those trackers, for some people, there's actually a sleep disorder called orthosomnia. It is a sleep disorder, meaning anxiety from trying to sleep correctly because of all those devices and information. Okay. So people start competing with themselves. Yeah. Like, oh, I didn't get enough REM last night. That is not like, to me, I just said the best sleep technology is inside of you. Have good sleep habits. If you're at risk for a sleep disorder like OSA, go get diagnosed and get treatment if you need it. With your dentist or with a CPAP, it depends, because people have certain compliance issues because they may be a CPAP failure because they have claustrophobia or they can't wear it or whatever. But the stats are the average person uses their CPAP for 3.5 hours a night, which is just troubling, and an oral appliance for, let's say, 6-ish. Where do you want to be treated for 6 hours or treated for 3.5? What about the other hours that you're not breathing properly? So your question is about these trackers. If they give you information that helps you make changes to your behaviors and your habits, great. But if it's just more competition with yourself or your friends and it's not helping change your habits, then what's the use?
That makes sense. How do you feel about alarm clocks? Because don't they often wake you up in the middle of REM?
So that's the kind of clock you should have, an old fashioned clock. As I said, shockingly, my phone is not at my fingertips here, so I can't hold that up. But some scientists, I don't particularly agree, would say that if you need an alarm clock, you're sleep deprived. Mm-hmm. I wake up before my alarm pretty much every day.
That's usually what I do. It's almost like the just in case, it's the last minute I need to get up, so I'm not totally late for work.
But I'm going to give a big tip for you. And, I asked, is this really for all of you or is this for your patients? And I'm trying to give you a little bit of both.
Sure. Yeah.
Providing education and materials to your patients is critical. And we can talk about that if we have time at the end, what that might be. But for you personally, I'm going to give a tip. Set your phone alarm an hour before bed. And when it goes off, that becomes the hour for you time. Whether you're going to talk to your spouse or your partner, or you're going to read a book, you're definitely going to shower or bathe at night. You want to shower in the morning, fine. Very few people take a bath in the morning, but you want to shower in the morning, fine. You should go to bed clean. You should get your sheets clean. It's relaxing. It's good for the body temperature as you start to cool down for sleep. It's relaxing. So you set your phone alarm an hour before bed, and that's your cue. And at that moment, either if you insist on using your phone for your alarm, set it and move it out of the bedroom or across where you cannot touch it. Because if you awaken during the night and you look at your phone, first of all, you see the time and you're off to the, your brain's off to the races.
Yeah.
Plus the fact, you tell me, if you look at your phone in the middle of the night and you see a text, are you going to ignore it? No, nobody has that willpower. So you're going to look at it. So bye-bye phone, relax, transition to sleep in peace, get off your devices, turn off the TV, read a book, talk to somebody. So it's just such a, talk to your spouse. I mean, 80% of couples, the last thing they look at before they go to sleep is their phone. So find ways to transition to sleep in peace.
That's fair. I usually leave my phone downstairs, but that's mainly because I'm concerned about the EMF it's transmitting right next to my head if I put it on the end table. Do you have any?
Interesting.
Ideas about that? Does EMF make any difference?
Look, I'm happy that you're that conscientious about that. Just tell me, do you wear earbuds?
No, I do have some. once in a while.
But I wear them for walks, but they are not healthy for your brain.
Yeah.
They're just not. The 5G in your head. So the fact that you're taking your phone out of your, you know, I say recharge your phone out of the bedroom so you can recharge in bed. And kudos to you for doing so and for other reasons. So you obviously have a clock because you said you do set an alarm.
Yeah, I have like this really old school alarm clock I've had for forever.
Good, good.
This is one thing.
Good.
On batteries.
that's wonderful. I think that's terrific. But, you know, yes, having your phone next to you, but aside from all those other vibrational frequency issues, it's just the sheer temptation and the sheer use. So there is one, you know, I don't like any of these apps that you have where your phone has to be next to your bed. Like, I'm sorry. You know, forget it. It's just, you know, I got asked to look at a company last week. It's dependent on the phone being next to your bed all the time. And I'm, you know, I'm one, it projects, you know, it projects videos on your ceiling.
Yeah.
Like really, I just, we were, our biology hasn't changed. Our behaviors have.
Yes.
That's inflicting that on our biology. Are you a good sleeper?
Me? Well, I fall asleep very, very easily, which annoys my wife a lot. I can tell you that part. And I don't do well if I get less than 7.5 hours. It's like makes a huge, huge difference.
And you stay asleep during the night?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Good. Good. So you know, you see, our biology knows what it wants. So it's quantity, quality, and consistency. Yeah. And our circadian clock likes to know, likes consistency. We're going to get up at the same time. We're going to go to sleep at the same time. It's not realistic in life every day.
Oh, absolutely.
But I like to say a good night's sleep begins when you awaken and a good day begins when you go to sleep. Life is a 24/7 thing.
Yes, I think you're
and
right about that.
What happens is we've blurred the difference. We've blurred that division between day and night. We've totally blurred it. We've brought day into night and it's just got everybody screwed up. So consistency is important.
Do you have any advice for people who want to get up earlier, but they're having a hard time doing that and they like to stay up really late? Like I find that to be a challenge of my own and my wife. We like to stay up really late, but I really would like to get up a lot earlier to do some other stuff I want to do.
Again, your biology, your biological clock, your circadian rhythm has its needs.
Yeah.
And if you want to stay up really late, are you owls? Are you using coffee to stay up? Are you really one who wants to stay up late? So if that's your natural proclivity to be a night owl, you may want, look, I'd like to get up every day at, you know, an hour earlier so I could get more done, do my yoga, do my meditation and all. So I start my day earlier. And it's hard. So you have to be realistic. You may want to, but if you're going to want to go get up earlier, you're going to have to back up your bedtime a bit.
Of course, yeah.
And it's not cold turkey. You're going to need to adapt your circadian rhythm over a certain amount of time, whatever that is, like maybe 15 minutes a week for a month because you want to back it up for an hour. That may be too quick for your biological clock.
That's interesting.
But you'd have to, but how, look, every one of you listening prepares for a patient. You need to prepare for sleep. And so that routine, you have a routine to see a patient. You need a routine to prepare for sleep. And so if you start to do that, back that up and set that alarm on your phone as a reminder, oh, it's an hour before I want to go to bed. I'm going to start my bedtime routine. And if you have kids and they're younger, you know, have everybody put away their stuff. If they're so young, they don't have a cell phone, fine too. Do their bed. They have a bedtime routine. You should too.
That makes sense.
And if they're teenagers, they may go to bed after you. But make sleep a family priority. Start to explore it. I just told somebody this the other day on a podcast. I suggested for families, because that was the question. You know, your kids aren't learning about sleep in school, whether they're in middle school, second grade, or high school. So start a family thing where you're learning about sleep, like sleep fact of the week. Everybody finds out something and you share it that week. And you're like, wow, Mom, I didn't know that everything I was learning in school is encoded in my memory during sleep. That's really cool. Or they play soccer. I didn't realize that my reaction time, no wonder I didn't sleep well for that a couple of nights. No wonder I had such trouble on the soccer field.
Yeah, putting a lot more value into it. That makes sense.
Love that. Yeah, putting more value into it.
What do you think about these devices that say they can help you get like 8 hours worth of sleep in 4 hours, or it helps you with jet lag, et cetera? Do they have any?
I don't know of a device that tells me I'm going to get the same sleep in 4 hours that I would get in 8 hours. Like, that's news to me. And I know the Army and the military has been trying to do that kind of stuff for a long time. And again, look, when they recruit now, because I talk to these people, when they recruit now and they're in one of those trucks that goes around recruiting for the Army, they're doing all kinds of testing to find out, are they a desk job? How are they with sleep deprivation? You know, what is your phenotype for how you function best? So, you know, so that really depends. I mean, you just have to pay attention to how you feel and to what your needs are. And are you listening to your body? And we're talking a lot about physical health, mental health too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mental health is critical. Sleep is critical to mental health.
What role, if any, does temperature in the bedroom have on the quality of your sleep?
Temperature is really important. You don't want it too hot. We all know what it's like to sleep somewhere when it's 90 degrees out and humid and there's no
air. That's when I can't. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, you hear 65 to 68 degrees Fahrenheit. It's what are you comfortable with? If my home was 65 to 68 degrees, I'd be shivering. But that's just because the way, you know, what the thermostat says and what I feel are a little bit different sometimes. So, and if one of a couple sleeps hot and the other's cold, you've got to adapt for that in bed linens, in what you sleep in the temperature in the house. But you want it to be cool, dark, and quiet and uncluttered, I will add.
Yeah, my wife and I have moved to just different sheets. Like, I just have a sheet and she has a sheet and a little blanket and all this other stuff going on. And it made it a lot easier. Let's talk about the breathing techniques that you were talking about. What do you recommend?
So first of all, I'm going to recommend the book, Breath, The New Science of Lost Art. I don't know if you put any information on the site, but it's by James Nestor, N-E-S-T-O-R.
Yeah, we'll put a link on the blog page.
Good. MrJamesNestor.com. You can listen to my expert Q&A interview because I do a lot on sleep and breathing with him and a few techniques. I'm going to just suggest one thing. Start to be conscious if you are breathing through your nose or your mouth. And if you're a runner, I watched a woman on the lake in Chicago the other day running. She had more pep. Her mouth was wide open. And I, for a split second, I almost tapped her and wanted to say, you're in incredible shape. You're a beautiful runner, but you need to check this out because your mouth should be closed. And so you need to first become aware if you're nasal or mouth breathing. If you're waking up with a dry mouth, it's already a telltale sign.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So how do you do that? I can't tell you in one question, one answer, how to do that. But one thing you can start to do is your own awareness of it. And on my website, thesleepambassador.com, under the resources, my first section under resources is breathing. And there's a bunch of resources right there for you to start to be aware. You know, and go like this, close one nostril, breathe in, and shut it off, breathe through the other nostril, and get a sense, because every 90 minutes, one nostril is going to favor one side more than the other. If you have a deviated septum, you're never going to breathe out of that side as well. What are you going to do about it? And dentist and orthodontist, you know, for some people, it's hard to keep their mouth open while they're and breathing through it while you're working on them because they're having trouble nasal breathing. So go to mute snoring.com. Get one, CVS, Amazon, Walgreens, try it. See what size you are, small, medium, or large. Most people are medium. and put in a nasal dilator. Close your mouth, close your eyes, take a few breaths without it, put it in and see, feel the difference. But it so behooves you. And if your child's a mouth breather, or your patient who's your pediatric dentist or orthodontist seeing kids, they should not be mouth breathing. Go to airwayhealth.org, the Foundation for Airway Health, and look at all the information there. I mean, it's that whole, I'm on the board, but it was all designed pretty much around dentist and orthodontist.
Interesting. Okay. So you have any tips of things you can do in the morning to help kind of set the tone for later?
I love that. That actually is awaken to a new day. The first thing I will say is to pause when you awaken and just get a sense of how your body feels. Maybe set a few intentions for the day, not big ones. Maybe I'll smile most of today, or I'll make the call to make that appointment, or I'm going to take a walk today. Simple things that are doable. Don't pressure yourself. And then when you get out of bed, you want to open the curtains. You want to get now's the time to get the blue light. Now's the time you want blue light. You want it. That's what your circadian clock wants.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to say, and I just did LinkedIn as one of my clients. I just did a bed making video. Took 10 hours to film a 10-minute video on the
bed making
your bed. Okay. And there's a book from a 4-star admiral, 37-year Navy SEAL, called Make Your Bed, because it's the first principle for Navy SEALs. Why do you want to make your bed when you get up? It's a task completed, and it starts your day, separates day from night. And good day or bad day, it's really nice and honors your sleep to come back to a bed that's well made. No, you don't have to be able to drop a quarter and have it bounce. But but making your bed, I'm very big on that. I think it's really, really important. And get up and start moving.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I've heard a lot of people say to drink a big glass of water in the morning.
It's really interesting you say that. I love that you said that. Do not drink a big glass of water before you go to bed, because your bladder is going to say, time out.
Yeah.
You want me to sleep through the night? Because I can't hold all this for 7 hours, 8 hours.
That's funny, because when you asked me if I sleep through the night, I was like, yes, most of the time, except when I do that.
And you can't, because your bladder is just going to say, time out. Just like eating a big meal before bed, your digestive tract is going to say, what are you doing to me? I need to be horizontal and process nutrients. I can't digest and make all these enzymes horizontally and do all my sleep stuff, encoding memory and all that, while I'm trying to digest for you. So
yes, that makes sense.
In the morning, ironically, I have started when I get up, before I meditate and all, they have a glass of water and my whole system starts kicking. It's just a wonderful thing to do. And I should add that to my list, because you start the day hydrating. And I rarely say that, but I'm adding it to my tip list.
Interesting. What about, is there like, what do you think the maximum, what is the minimum time between eating the last thing you eat and going to sleep? Do you have any recommendations for that?
So a big meal, a good 3 to 4 hours for sure. Yeah. You know, that's for sure. Now, if you're hungry and it's bedtime, have a sleep-friendly snack, a banana. It's got melatonin in it, by the way. And
banana. That's interesting.
Or you know, something very light, a piece of toast or something chewed well, easily digestible, but don't go to sleep hungry. And if you have no problem peeing during the night, then have a cup of, you know, chamomile tea or something. But if you have trouble getting up to pee a lot, by the way, if people who have to pee a lot during the night and it isn't a prostate issue and they don't drink a lot before bed, it can be a sign of sleep apnea, because the brain, fragmented sleep, the brain will do whatever it can to get air, and it will create these micro arousals when you stop breathing, and you'll feel, you know, and you keep waking up and you think you have to pee because it interrupts how the bladder works and your various enzymes because of those micro arousals and fragmented sleep due to sleep apnea. look, Richie, we are, when you think about how our body and brains are designed, it's like a miracle of miracles. It's true. So unbelievable that we have all these processes to alert us that something's not working right. And you, all of you out there in the dental and ortho industry, whether you're the practitioner, you're a hygienist, you're a myofunctional therapist, your staff, you are seeing people, they are coming to you for care. And how they breathe and how they sleep is integral to how they function in life.
Absolutely.
And you have this portal into their airway. You don't have to treat them for sleep apnea if that's not your expertise, but you can steer and lead them to resources so that they can get the best sleep, to be breathing properly, so that all the beautiful work you do, so they really can smile.
Yeah, awesome. All right, so let's talk a little bit about sleep apnea specifically. One question we had was, what was the difference between central sleep apnea and obstructive sleep apnea?
So in central sleep apnea, the brain doesn't send the proper signals to the muscles that control your breathing. Ah. So it is a skeletal muscle. It's a brain function.
Yeah.
Versus obstructive sleep apnea, there's an obstruction to the airway, causing an anatomical problem that inhibits your proper breathing. So they're very distinctly different. One is brain oriented, signal oriented. The other one will send signals because your brain's going to do whatever it can to get air. And that's why it's an apnea. You stop breathing. Maybe you awaken or certainly arouse and you have fragmented sleep because you're not getting the air you need.
Wow. Can you treat central when it's a brain issue?
I mean, I know people with central sleep apnea, there are medical things. It's not wearing a device that's going to help you with that. But yes, there are. And for narcolepsy and restless leg syndrome too, there are things to do about it. Doing nothing though is not a good option.
Yeah, right. So are certain people more at risk for sleep apnea than others?
You know, that's such an, do I look like I have sleep apnea? You know, I'm thin, I'm in good shape. So it's an anatomical issue. You know, it's tissues, muscles, all of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Overweight is certainly a problem. Big neck size. You know, I can look at some people, mainly men, and see right, or women too, for that matter, and see right away by their neck size and watch the way they're breathing. And I'm not a doctor, an MBA after my name, but I can certainly get a sense that they may be at risk for sleep apnea. But there's others, you know, you awaken with headaches. You're always tired. Someone tells you you snore or stop breathing during the night. All of those can be telltale signs that you're at risk for sleep apnea. But how do you find out? Well, there are, first of all, doing it, just don't ignore it. Somebody said to me, well, some things you learn to live with. No, you're not going to live as long likely if you have untreated sleep apnea or poor sleep for that matter. So wait, was your question about what do you do about it? Or was your question, how do you know?
Like some symptoms, some things that might make you more likely to have it.
So those were, so could be weight. It could be age. It could be other, you know, mouth formation. Like you've got, you know, if you see you have a scalloped tongue, it means your tongue is too tight. You know, it's too, your palate's too small for it. So it's probably going back.
Oh.
So you may need to see a myofunctional therapist. You know that you've got, you know, you've already got your mouth breathing. Why are you mouth breathing? Is it something you need to see an ENT? So all of those things, and back to the questionnaire for dentists and orthodontists to start to talk about sleep and breathing. It's been enough to get them to ask questions about sleep for all of you. But now, oh my God, breathing? Like we breathe. But seriously, how you breathe, whether you breathe correctly or not, is critical to your health.
Yeah, that absolutely
does. So if you as a dentist or orthodontist in your practice, and goodness, you know, Ortho Thrive is doing so much for supporting practices.
Thanks.
What can you do to, and we can talk about that. What information can you give? Because for every of the, you know, well over 150,000 dentists in the US alone, and I don't remember the number of orthodontists, but they're not all going to provide their own stuff. So maybe, and that's an interesting question, what can OrthoThrive provide so that their patients can thrive, their practice can thrive without their becoming an expert in something they're not going to become an expert in?
Yeah, that's true. I very rarely like to offer anything that's going to add to the plate of these practices, because these doctors are so busy already.
But it's not just, see, we talked about, was I presenting to the people listening for themselves in their sleep or for their practice and their patients? Both. So you need some resources, and I can provide those. To where do people go if they want more information on sleep or breathing health? And
yeah,
how do they know if they have a airway issue? Just wrap that in. It's just information. You're not, you know, maybe there's some courses too, but we each need to, nobody can sleep for you, but you. Nobody
no
can
doubt.
Breathe for you, but you.
Yep.
So you need to empower yourself to do it well. And your patients.
So speaking of teaching, so I know you're a LinkedIn Learning instructor. Do you have any other courses on there?
So LinkedIn Learning is the online learning platform that LinkedIn owns.
Yeah.
And my course is called Sleep is Your Superpower. And it's it's on my website, Services of Courses, thesleepambassador.com. And that has, it's incredible. It keeps going up by the thousands every week. It's like over 130,000
awesome.
People.
Yeah.
Why? Why are so many people? Because they're looking for information to improve their sleep. But in a half an hour course, it's a great start. But to sustainably improve your habits, your sleep habits, go get care if you're at risk for a sleep disorder, because you probably also have poor sleep and need to work on that. I have a course called Sleep Well, Live Well, which is there also. It's a 4-week sleep improvement program. But coupled with it, and you asked about this, and I think it's important, is an app called Drowzle. Drowzle.
Okay.
And Drowzle, the medical part of that, the prescription part of it, is the first FDA cleared app as a home sleep test for sleep apnea on your
really?
Phone.
Oh, very.
And that is prescription oriented. But when you buy the Sleep Well, Live Well program with Drowzle, get a year access to the Drowzle app. And immediately overnight, although you need to sleep alone, so nobody, you know, and you can put this on your website for your patients, you can overnight be screened for sleep apnea risk. It's not based on snoring, it's based on breathing algorithms.
Yes.
And you put Drowzle on your, that's the one night I'm going to let you have your phone next to your bed.
Yeah.
And Drowzle has lots of daytime stuff, questionnaires to assess your overall sleep health. But if you want to screen yourself for sleep apnea, you use Drowzle for a night or maybe two, and you will get a PDF the next day, both through the app and digitally through an email, telling you your risk for sleep apnea. Then you're going to, if you see you're at moderate or severe risk, you need to see a sleep specialist. And then you get access to Sleep Well, Live Well, the 4-week sleep improvement program. And I might say it's $50. I mean,
yeah, it could change your life.
Program. Right? Just went down from a couple hundred. So
oh, wow.
We want people to optimize their sleep. We want the 85%, even if it's 80% of people with sleep apnea, and that's 80% of your patients, likely 20% to 25% have undiagnosed sleep apnea statistically.
Wow, that's a lot.
And of those, half of them, the 15% that are diagnosed, half of them at least are not compliant with treatment. So we're back to comorbidities and we're back to all of these issues. And you, I mean, I love the dental and the ortho communities because you have this gateway. And so look at the Foundation for Airway Health, airwayhealth.org. And you'll see the sister organization, the AAPMD, American Academy for Physiological Medicine and Dentistry.
Wow.
And I just listened to a webinar last night. It was like their 120th webinar. Incredible resources there for the community of practitioners, from hygienists to dentists to orthodontists. You'll see your peers speaking about all of this. AAPMD.org. So we need to collaborate. We need to talk. We need to serve people. People come to their dentist more than they come to their PCP. And I'm sure that's true. You guys have a, you know, you just, we need you. We need you to talk or provide resources for, in addition to oral health, to sleep and breathing. Because we all know about periodontal disease and mouth breathing and all those issues too. I'm telling you, if I go to my periodontist for cleaning, I'd like them all to sit in a lecture and say, you should be, if you've got somebody with dry mouth all the time and periodontal, do you talk to them about how they breathe and what to do about it?
Yeah, right. I'm sure they don't. All right. So if a doctor's interested in contacting you, how should they go about it?
Well, Nancy@thesleepambassador.com. If you forget that, go to my website, give me a question on the, you know, contact us and I will respond to you. But I will talk to, you know, to your colleagues at OrthoThrive about what could you provide to your constituency to make it easy for them to give information for their patients and their clientele. And also, what would bring in more patients?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Screen it, you know, have something where they can be screened.
Yeah, anything that adds value to what they're offering, I think is a great idea, especially we're here to help, right? That's the whole point.
Value added to life is breathing and sleeping well.
Yeah, we're going to be more so than that. Nancy, is there anything else you want to cover before we wrap up?
You know, I just want to thank you and thank OrthoThrive for what you do, for bringing me on today, and just everybody, for you, yourself, your family, your colleagues, and certainly your patients, your community, good sleep is possible, healthy breathing is possible, but without it, we just can't thrive. And it's an issue we all need to address. So thank you for having me. And I just, it's all doable.
Absolutely. Nancy, thanks for being on the show. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Getting enough sleep is a subject near and dear to my heart right now. I have a 2-month-old and he keeps me very busy day and night. So Nancy's episode was very interesting for me personally. She gave us some great tips and tricks on how to get better sleep, how to recognize when you're not getting good enough sleep, and just how important it is to be optimal during the day. If you want to be a guest on the show or you have an idea for an episode, you can go to orthothrive.com. You can email me at richard@orthosalesengine.com. Keep grinding, keep thriving, and I'll see you next time.